Well, this morning we'll be in chapter 27 of Proverbs, and we'll see what we have to go in this. Okay, I'll begin by reading it. Boast not yourself of tomorrow, for you know not what a day may bring forth. Let another man praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips. A stone is heavy, and the sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? Open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. The full soul loathes a honeycomb, but to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. As a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man that wanders from his place. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, so does the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of calamity, for better is a neighbor that is near than a brother afar off. My son, be wise and make my heart glad, that I may answer him that reproaches me. A prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. He that blesses his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. A continual dropping is a very rainy day, and a contentious woman are alike. A continual dropping in a very rainy day, and a contentious woman are alike. Whosoever hides her hides the wind, and the ointment of his right hand, which bewrays itself. Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Whoso keeps the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof, so he that waits on his master shall be honored. As in water, face answers to face, so the heart of man to man. Hell and destruction are never full, so the eyes of man are never satisfied. As the fining pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise. Though thou should bray a fool in a mortar and among wheat with a pedestal, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and does the crown endure to every generation? The hay appears, and the tender grass shows itself, and the herbs of the mountains are gathered. The lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats are for the price of the field. And you shall have goat's milk enough for thy food, and for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance of thy maidens. Or for thy maidens. Okay? Let's go back and see what it really says, okay? Boast not today. The word thyself shouldn't even be there. Okay? That's an added word. Boast not, and the word of, the little word of, really says tomorrow. It's the word yom, 3117. And that's the word for today. Huh?
Yom
is the word, the Hebrew word. It means today. It says, boast not today of tomorrow. So he's saying, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't brag about it because you don't know what's going to happen. Because you know not what a day may bring forth. I don't know where they come up with that word thyself, because it shouldn't even be there, but it should be today. Boast not today of tomorrow. So I can't brag today what's going to happen or go transpire tomorrow, because I really don't know, do I? I can have a pretty educated guess, but I could be wrong. Check the weather out every day. Okay, but that's about everything in life, not just about the weather. We're talking about everything in life. I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And we can have an educated guess from what out of the past, but you know what? That doesn't mean it's absolutely going to happen that way, does it? So we need to just live today. Isn't that what the basic story, what it's telling you there? Live today and let tomorrow take care of itself. In the New Testament, I think Paul wrote and said, don't take thought of tomorrow. There's enough evil in the day to suffice for it. Say, don't even worry about tomorrow. Just take care of today. And we'll deal with tomorrow when it gets here. Okay? Let another, cross out the word man, let another praise you. The word man is added anyway. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. Kind of like don't blow your own horn, right? Yeah, there's a lot of people blows their own horn. Well, not a good thing. Just not a good thing. We should know that by now. Verse 3. A stone is heavy and the sand weighty, but a fool's anger is more, is not heavier, but more severe than them both. A fool's anger is heavier than both of them. It's more severe than both of them. Okay? Let me read the Living Bible in this. It said a rebel's frustrations are heavier than sand and rocks. And that's what we're talking about really, isn't it? A rebel's frustration is anger. Verse 4. Wrath is cruel, or literally fierce, and anger is like a flood, is what it should say. Anger is like a flood. But who is able to stand before, not envy, but jealousy? Should be jealousy. We can take the word jealousy and chase it all the way back to the book of Genesis. When Cain and Abel was in the picture, Cain was jealous of Abel. What happened?
Killed him.
It led to murder, didn't it? So it's a very bad thing. Jealousy is a nasty, nasty thing. Verse 5, open rebuke or open correction is better than concealed love. Or and this word love here is talking about human-to-human love. Okay? So open correction is better than someone loving you and not correcting you. Correction is very necessary in our lives. And most people cannot receive correction. They're offended by it for some reason. Well, it's just where they're at. Yeah. But if someone can show me I'm wrong in anything, I would appreciate it because I don't want to be wrong. I want to know the truth. How's that? And so what I speak, if someone can show me that I'm wrong, fine, show me, prove me. Don't just accuse me. Prove me with some facts. Give me some proof. And I'll appreciate it, and I'll hug your neck for it.
Gentleness is one of the fruit of the Spirit.
Yes.
It means making it, it's a correction. It's making it...
In gentleness.
Making it a usable for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Showing them where they were strong and making it so they can apply that.
Yeah, but not embarrassing them or tearing them down. You know, it's in love. And I've said for years, confrontation is very healthy as long as it's done the right way. Just because we differ in something doesn't mean we're not friends. It just means we have a different opinion. And two opinions can't be right about the same thing. Okay? Now, we can think they are from where we stand, but when we get the true picture of it, there's only going to be one truth, isn't there? See, I could be wrong or you could be wrong. We need to find out what the truth is. It's not about right and wrong. We need to know the truth.
Come in with a true communion between.
And it'll work out, won't it?
And what the truth is.
It'll work out.
Not to prove. Who's right? I'm right, you're right.
No, what's the truth?
Matter. It's just
the truth. It's all about the truth. And if we find the truth, see, what's that little saying that I keep in the front of my book? What you believe will divide us, but what you know will unite us.
Absolutely.
See, so if we come together and work it out, find out what the truth is and agree on what the truth is, that's uniting us, isn't it? It's not separating us. That's why we have so many separations in the church world today, because everybody wants to be right, and nobody cares about the truth. Okay?
Well, if they do come out to be correct on something,
they want to crow.
Say, yeah, I told you so.
Yeah. They want to crow about it. And that's not cool. It's not cool.
That's like verse 2,
don't blow your own horn. That's right. Verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kiss of an enemy is deceitful. Right? Let me read to you in the Living Bible. Open rebuke is better than hidden love. Oh, no, excuse me. I got it right back. These verses are so close together in this Living Bible. Wounds from a friend are better than kisses from an enemy. Okay. Because when a friend wounds you, it's not intentional, is it? They're trying to help. They might wound you, but they're not intentionally trying to hurt you. If they're your friend, they wouldn't hurt you. And that's what we need to understand about people. If we have relationship, we find out that when someone says something contrary to what you said, it's not to offend you, but it's try to help you see the truth. Nothing more. Okay. Verse 7. The full or the satisfied soul doesn't loathe, but it rejects honeycomb. But to the hungry soul, every bitter thing is sweet. So what's it really saying? To the satisfied one, the one who thinks they have it all, they reject the honey or the honeycomb. It could be honey or honeycomb. What is honey?
They know it all.
Yep. They reject anything else because they feel like they're comfortable where they're at and they know everything.
They don't need
the revelation of God because they've already come to their own revelation, haven't they? So it's talking about the revelation of God here. And the ones who think they're full, they're not really full. Maybe they're full of themselves. That would be a better way to put it, wouldn't it? They reject the revelation. But someone that's hungry, every bitter thing is sweet. Even though it's hard and it's bitter to go through, they realize the value of it because it'll change you. It's like every difficulty we pass through in life makes us a better person. It'll either kill us or make us stronger, one of the two, won't it? So we realize that God has got a work to do in us, and all these things that come up in our lives that try to take us off our course are things for us to overcome and to make us stronger. So why should I reject the things that God has sent in my life to make me better? That would be foolish, wouldn't it? So to me, every one of those things are sweet because they bring about the perfection of God in our lives. As a bird that wanders from her nest, so is humanity or mankind that wanders from his place. A bird that leaves the nest probably don't return. We're talking about a young bird. They leave the nest. They probably never find their way back to the nest, will they?
Before it's time.
Yeah. They leave before it's time and they never find their way back to the nest. But so is it about man. When man left his place with God in the garden, right? He'll never find his way back there, will he? On his own. God has to bring him back. And man wandered away from his place, which was the Garden of Eden, which was in the mind of God. We should be there with God at all times. And God has never forsaken us. God has never left us. And that's Old Testament. That was said before the new covenant came in effect. And it's still in effect that God has never left us. If God left us, we would be dead. We are here because he is here. And we don't have to worry about that. We've never left him. We just in our mind think we've left him. That's all it is. It's an illusion of our mind. Okay, verse 9. Ointment or oil and incense, instead of ointment and perfume, rejoice the heart or mind, and actually they lighten up the mind or brighten the mind. Makes you feel better, doesn't it? Makes you think better. So does the pleasant conversation, not sweetness, of a man's friend by hearty counsel, or the counsel of the inner man is what it should say. The counsel of the inner man. So the counsel he's talking about, and this friend he's talking about, who do you think he's talking about? The Christ within. The Christ within. So he says, you know, this oil and incense brightens up the mind, but so does the pleasant conversation of a man by the counsel of the inner man. That's what the language says, the counsel of the inner man. So when I hear the counsel of the inner man speaking to me, that's what brings it into line, doesn't it? I got to hear this and I got to understand it. When I do that, everything just falls in place. You don't have to worry, do you? No fear, no condemnation, no guilt, even if we make mistakes. Verse 10, Your own friend and your father's friend forsake not. Neither go into your brother's house in the day of calamity or oppression and misfortune, because better is a neighbor that is near than a brother afar off. Okay, let me read that out of the Living Bible. I think it's pretty good out there. Never abandon a friend, either yours or your father's. Then you won't need to go to a distant relative for help in your time of need. See, even though I have a brother that, say, lives in Michigan or in Florida or whatever, someone living close to me is handier than them. I can't wait days or weeks for someone to come and help me when I'm in dire need, can I? I need assistance. So I need friends everywhere. Okay? Verse 11, my son, who's he talking to?
Me.
That's what I wanted to hear. Everybody said me. My son, be wise and make my mind glad, that I may respond to him that reproaches me. When someone comes and slanders you before God, what will God say? That's my well-beloved son. Enter into my rest, my well-beloved son. Don't worry about what they're saying. You think God hears all those negative things said about us? You think he cares? He doesn't pay attention to that stuff. He knows our heart, doesn't he? He knows what's in our mind. He put it there.
Basically, don't take in that tiny revenge or big grumpy or retaliate.
Leave it alone.
Get your mind glad.
Yep.
And come forth with the Spirit of God and let God help.
He'll take care of all of it.
All right.
Don't have to worry about it. Verse 12. A prudent man foresees evil. Literally, it should say a wise or an observant. That's something I've been dealing with for the last month or so with people about being observant. To be effective in life. And I'm not talking about just in spiritual things. I'm talking in every physical thing, every aspect of life. Lord, where you work at the plant out there, if you weren't observant, what could happen to you? All kinds of bad things. If you're driving and you're not observant, what could happen to you? Well, accidents happen whether you're looking or not sometimes. I mean, there's nothing you can do. But I'm saying, when you're not observant, you got a greater chance of having these problems, don't you? In fishing, if you're not observant, you're not going to catch as many fish. If you're hunting, you're not going to get near as much game, are you? See, being observant in life, if people that walk around in a little bubble, like they're the only ones there, they're the ones either are in accidents or create accidents all the time. Because they're not looking out for themselves and others. There's many times I could have wrecks if I wanted to just go ahead and say, this is my right-of-way, I can take it. I could do that and have all kinds of accidents. But my body can't stand these impacts. I don't need any more of it. See? So the best thing to do is just avoid it. And it says, a wise man or wise or observant man foresees evil and conceals himself. Don't hide it, but conceals himself. In other words, he gets away from that situation that would bring that evil to him or these accidents to him. So, but the simple or the naive pass on and are punished or suffer a lot of things. Let me see what this says in the Living Bible. A sensible man watches for problems ahead and prepares to meet them. The simple never looks and suffers the consequences. That's a very good statement, isn't it? Very good way of saying it. I used to think the Living Bible was a piece of garbage. I really did. When I first started, because I was told the King James was all there was. But the Living Bible sometimes misses the mark, as bad as any of them does. But sometimes it's right on the money. The thought process is there.
Or it just makes it easier to understand what they
mean. In our language. And it's very good at times. And I don't recommend to any of them just be absolutely that's it, because all of them have faults. And we have to do our own homework, exercise our minds, right?
Yeah.
Exercise that mind. You'll find out what's right. See, I know that when I hold my hand up, I got four fingers and a thumb on it. If there was seven fingers up there and two thumbs, I know that's not a correct pattern. So when I learn the patterns and being observant, like this just said, be observant and foresee what's there, I know if I see a hand with four fingers and a thumb on it, that's the way it should look. That's the pattern. So if I look at everything in the Bible as patterns and see the pattern that God uses, whenever something comes up that's not the right pattern, what would I do with it? Just reject it, kick it off. Because that's not God's pattern. That's something someone slipped in there through the translations.
Or if you see something sticking out, all of a sudden it should
give you a whole picture.
To slow down and look. You need to look more closely at this, because there's more than just that little nugget right there. There's
absolutely
more to look at.
And that little nugget we see usually is just a precursor of what's really there. There's a whole lot more there if we stop and look. Right?
Yeah.
Verse 13, take his garment that is a surety for a stranger and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. I kind of like Living Bible. This, the world's poorest credit risk is the man who agrees to pay a stranger's debts.
Yeah.
That's a poor credit risk, isn't it? Verse 14, he that blesses his friend with a loud voice, and cross out the word rising, because that's not there. The loud voice early in the morning, it shall be considered a curse to him. Not counted, but considered a curse to him. You go in somebody's bedroom early morning screaming and yelling, you're liable to get something thrown back at you, aren't you? Yeah. See, people don't want to be woke up that way. It's not the smooth way of doing things. So, leave it alone. Verse 15. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman, okay, are alike. Now, what is this contentious woman?
It's my soul.
See? Everybody wants to look at the natural side, but we got to look at it spiritually, and that's my emotional side. My soul is my emotion. And when my emotional woman is very contentious, right? Until she is submitted unto her man, she's contentious. Not the natural man woman, but my soulish side, my emotional side, has to submit to my Christ, and then we'll be okay. But until that time, it's just like a rainy day that never quits. Kind of like the day we came home Friday. It rained for 4 hours so hard you could hardly see. The whole northern part of the state is flooded right now. Thank God it's going to the lake area and not coming down this way. We don't need any more of it. But all the way to Columbus, it was unreal.
Where you can actually exercise being a flatliner.
Absolutely.
Whenever this happens,
yep.
Then those emotions are a blessing to you.
Yep.
Instead of being a curse and you can't control them, or they're controlling you.
Yeah. See, Jesus had his emotions, didn't he? He wept. He was upset at times with people, the way they did things. But he never let the emotions control him. He controlled the emotions. So everything worked out. And people accused him of all kinds of bad things because he didn't act like everybody else. I think the New Covenant, one of the writings was, they'll think it strange when you run not in excess and riot with them. They'll think you're strange. Well, because you don't let the emotions run away. Most everybody runs away with their emotions, so that's okay. I'm not going to let it happen. Verse 16, whosoever hides her, who's her? The contentious woman above, the soul. Whoever hides her hides the wind or the spirit and the anointing of his right hand, which proclaims itself. See, so he says, hiding the contentious woman. You can't hide the contentious woman, could you? You cannot hide that emotional thing in you. You have to deal with that emotional woman.
Restrain is what the New King James.
Yeah. You have to learn to restrain her.
That's exercising the mind.
That is absolutely exercising the mind. Taking control over all these emotions and realizing that emotions will always deceive you. Always. Not part of the time. Always. Okay? So we can't, if we could hide her, we could hide the spirit. And that isn't going to happen. Okay?
Taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ.
Absolutely. Uh, Let me read 16 to you out of the Living Bible. This is kind of cute. You can no more stop her complaints than you can stop the wind or hold on to anything with oral slick hands. Like trying to pick up ball bearings, it's all soaked in oil. She can't hold on to them. Verse 17, iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance or the mind of his friend. Living Bible says it kind of good. A friendly discussion is as stimulating as the sparks that fly when iron strikes iron. Sometimes it's necessary. And iron, what does iron represent?
Will.
The stubborn will of man, the stiff-necked man. So when iron strikes iron, there's going to be some sparks fly, but it can be very stimulating in the end, right? So if someone doesn't, and that goes along in that verse 17, goes along with my statement that confrontation is healthy and good if it's done correctly with the right spirit behind it. See, it sharpens your mind. It calms you down. It gets you in the right course. Verse 18, whosoever maintains the fig tree. What's the fig tree? It's a symbol of the church. Well, not really religion. I'm going to take it to the good side on this. It's really something. Whosoever maintains the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof. So if you're maintaining and doing what you're supposed to and taking care, and see, the church is not a building. We got to get out of that mindset. Church is you. Yeah, see, if we take care, if we maintain our tree, our church, right? Our temple, if we maintain it, that fig tree, guess what? We're going to eat the fruit off of it, aren't we? Because we maintain the tree. So he that takes care of his master shall be honored. If I take care of my fig tree, guess what? I'll eat the fruit of it. And if I take care of my master the way I'm supposed to, I'll also be honored in that, won't I? Very simple to understand. Verse 19. As in the water, face doesn't answer it, but it reflects to face. Water reflects your face back to you, doesn't it? That's what it's saying, like a mirror. So the mind of man to man. So he's saying the mind in you reflects who you are back to you, doesn't it? It lets you know who you are. It's talking about the mind, not just the blood pump in her chest. Verse 20, hell. Bad word, not a curse word, it's just mistranslated. It's the word Sheol, it means grave. The grave and destruction are never full, so the eyes of Adam are never satisfied, or never full, right? As the finding pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is man to his praise. What's the refiner's pot do for the silver?
Refines it.
What's the furnace do for the gold?
Refines it.
He said, so is man, as a man to his praise. Okay? Now, let me read the Living Bible because I think it says it very well. The purity of silver and gold can be tested in a furnace, but a man is tested by his reaction to men's praise. By man's reaction to men's praise. So how do you react to the way someone praises you? Do you puff up like a big toad? Or do you say, well, thank you very much, and go on? There's multiple ways to respond to that praise. Someone can praise you for something you didn't say, yeah, that's cool, okay, and just go on and forget about it. Or you can revel in it and start telling everybody, look what everybody has said about me. Look how great I am. That pride and arrogance starts puffing you up and gets you in trouble. Verse 22, though you should not bray, but pound or grind a fool in a mortar along with wheat and a pedestal, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Living Bible says you can't separate a rebel from his foolishness, though you crush him to powder. You take them in there and just beat them up, and they still don't want to leave off their ignorance, do they? They want to hold on to it. We can take that to every aspect of life. Verse 23, be thou diligent to know the state of your flocks and look well to your herds. And that's not what it says. The words look well should say set your heart upon or your mind upon your herds. So who should you be thinking about?
Your house.
He says take care of your flocks. You know, be diligent to know the state of your flock and set your mind upon your herds. Take care of what you got.
Take care of your house.
Take care of everything God has given you. Be a good steward of that. That didn't say worship it, did it? And that's a problem today. Most people think if God blesses them, they're just supposed to heap up more and more and more and more. That's not what it's about. Scripture says this, the best thing a man can do is live by the fruits of his labor. What would that be, Lisa?
It's what you earn.
Whatever you earn, what are you supposed to do with it?
Take care of it.
No, live by it. Live within your means, but use what he gave you. He gave you, if God gave us $100,000 a year to live on, and we try to scrimp by on $20,000 so we can save $80,000, is that doing what God wants us to do?
No.
No. If he give us that, then utilize it. I mean, there's other wise things to do. Put some money back for a rainy day, to put up for your grandchildren, things like that. That's all part of it. You have to use the judgment of all this. But setting upon the money, what good does it do? I've got several friends that are multimillionaires, and they act like they're paupers. They're broke all the time. Never have no money. Of course, anytime you want to open their wallet up, there's enough $100 bills to choke a mule, you know. But they never have any money. They live like they're paupers. Oh, I can't spend no money. And they're in their 70s, you know, 60s and 70s, and they're bad health. And as soon as they die, their kids will blow through that like someone with a case of diarrhea. I mean, it'll be gone.
I mean, they put so much value on it, but
yeah.
What really good is it?
None.
They use it, it's just paper.
It's just a piece of paper. Well, actually, I used to say it was just a waste of cutting a tree down, but it's not really made. It's made out of cotton, I found out now. That's why your money's so flexible and doesn't break up like paper. It's cotton in it, so it's like cloth. It's not really paper. It's a mixture. But people get caught up on the value of things. And what's more valuable to me than anything in the world is friendship. People are valuable. Stuff is not valuable. I mean, what was someone saying? Last night I thought I was going to flip out of my seat when our daughter said she wants to have a party for us for our 30th anniversary next year, next February. And she said, what was the name of Asa Cakes? $500 for a cake. I said, well, you're insane. $500 for a cake? You haven't got the money for that. That's total insanity. $50 is too much to pay for a cake, much less $500. But she said, well, I was going to get a picture of your bass boat on there and you sitting there casting and things like that, you know. And I said, no, don't do that. That's insanity. Don't waste your money. See, I can't even grasp that, you know. That blew my mind. That actually blew my mind. I couldn't hardly believe it. And they're struggling to make a living and going to spend $500 for a cake. I don't even like cake most of the time. And I bet you I wouldn't like the cake that they put out. So, no, don't do it.
Then I'll just get you one of those berry pies and stick a picture of you on your basket.
There you go.
Yeah,
you can take a picture and set up her next to it. That'll be just cool. Give me a razzleberry pie or a banana cream pie or something like that and just forget about it. That's good enough. Hey, I don't want that fancy stuff, and that to me, that's just a total waste. Somebody's getting rich off of people being stupid, you know, and that's all that is. Verse 24, because riches are not forever. Boy, ain't that the truth. They can leave any time, can't they? I think the Old Testament says wealth takes up wings like a bird and flies away to heaven.
Because then they see, read something like that and they're like, well, if they don't hold on to it, it's going to be taken away.
Yeah. No, using it and using it foolishly is two different things. Use it wisely. A man in his 70s with millions of dollars living in an average home like we live in, you know, we never know, driving old vehicles, you know, with lots of miles on them, could live in any home he wanted to in this county, could buy it and pay cash for it, could drive any vehicle he wanted to, and would never miss the interest off his interest payments. Now, that's foolishness. That's foolishness. That's where I see it's gross to me to have that, where you could help so many people. But it's not my place to judge him, any of them. You know, just I know that they have it and they act like that. It's amazing. It's amazing to me. I know one thing. I wouldn't do it. Okay, because riches are not forever, and the crown endures or does not endure to every generation. You know, David, King David, had a crown, right? And his son Solomon got it afterwards, but didn't always stay in that family, did it? It jumped around. So God has plans and purposes for things, and just because my father did something doesn't mean that I'm going to be in that same rut, or I'm not going to be blessed the same way, am I? See, everybody thinks that's the way it works. But God's got a plan, and it's far above our thinking. We can't figure it out. He'll do it the way he wants to. And all I can do is live with whatever God provides in my life. And I give him credit for everything. It's all of it. Whatever's here is because of him. And today there's no air conditioning for a reason. We'll survive, won't we? Nope. Got the fans on. It's we can live with it. But I hope to have it by next week, because I will make some multiple calls if I have to get him over here. Should have been fixed a week ago. Okay. Verse 25. The hay appears and tender grass shows itself, and herbs of the mountains are gathered. Verse 26. The lambs are for your, or the young rams, it should say, not lambs, but young rams are for your clothing, and the full-grown goats are the price of the field. And you shall have goat's milk enough for your food and for the food of your household and for the life, not maintenance, but the life of your maidens. Now, what I want to say about is verse 25, 26, and 27 is God's provision, isn't it? Utilize what God gives you. It's all about God's provision in those last verses. He's trying to tell you what you have is what God has given to you. So what should you do with it? Use it wisely. Don't abuse it, but use it wisely. Okay? I do want to read 25, 26, and 27 in the Living Bible. It says, then there will be lamb's wool enough for clothing and goat's milk enough for food for all your household after the hay is harvested and the new crop appears and the mountain grasses are gathered in. It's going to be there. When the harvest is over, you'll have enough to get through. Don't worry about it. All you're supposed to do is do what God tells you to do, and he'll take care of the providing. Okay? No questions, comments, or rocks to throw?